Hello, this is Wendy Bauer with the Decatur Herald and Review. Today is June 17th, 2019. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined Structure and Guidance: Young Men Making Right Choices, Helping Boys, Teens. All parents want their children to live long, healthy, happy lives. For some, the worry their children won't live to see another day is a daily thought. Elder Clinton Leon Dye, 63, is the founder of Young Men Making Right Choices, a group designed to encourage spiritual, healthy living among young black males. Boys ages 7 to 17 meet periodically at the House of Miracles, 441 North Church Street, Decatur, for activities, prayer, and study time. 4 years ago, Dye began organizing a group to help the young black men in the area. "When the burden is heavy on you, it's something that doesn't let up on you that easy," he said. The idea remained in his mind after reading and listening to continuous media coverage of the death and incarceration of black men. The alarming rate right now of the way our young men are dying and falling by the wayside, he said. It's happening everywhere, but especially in the black areas. According to a 2017 Bureau of Justice Statistics study, the imprisonment rate for sentenced black males was almost 6 times that of sentenced white males. Recent federal data also shows black men dying at a higher rate than other demographic groups. The death rate among black men was calculated at around 1,083 deaths per 100,000 people, compared to about 855 for white men, 728 for black women, and 642 for white women. According to Dye, the first priority for young men making right choices is to teach the Word of God. Dye often refers to the verse Proverbs 22:6, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." God's word is the final authority, Dye said. When you go the other way, there are bad consequences. Jalen Thompson, 15, has been with the group only a few months, but has already become one of the people the younger children look up to. Being one of the older ones, you can't act or play around with them as much as you would someone your own age, he said. They try to be like you. Sometimes they argue, and you have to calm them down, said Braden Affalone. You have to keep them calm. At 12 years old, Braden has become another member of the group they admire. He has techniques that help him find peace while in certain situations. You just take a deep breath, remember who you're with, and how you should act, he said. A number of young people in the area are being raised without fathers, Dye said, and the mothers are trying to make the bacon and cook it too, he said. Structure, morals, and guidance are the fundamentals of the organization. Dye said the lack of a father figure has diminished many of these fundamentals. That is why he stepped up to be a positive influence in the lives of the young men he meets. I cry sometimes, he says. It is urgent to help them. His emotions run much deeper than what he sees in the children, but also comes from their mothers who suffer. The worst thing you can see is putting your child in a grave and not seeing him again, he said. Dye is often approached by family members voicing their concerns about the state of their youth's futures or lack of a future. This is happening everywhere, he said. They need answers. With God, he believes, all things are possible, though they might take time. The children have already witnessed positive responses from their actions. With a simple thank you, they have seen people's attitudes change toward them, and they don't know it, but they have planted a seed, Dye said about the public's reaction to the boys. Dye understands working with youth can be a challenge. Bible studies are only part of their teachings. Building a relationship is also needed. In a way, I become their father, Dye said. The program has approximately 30 boys participating. Some of the activities include attending ball games, eating at a restaurant, or outdoor games. Kids in the urban area, they don't experience fishing or doing charity work, Dai said. They experience guns and gangs and drugs. That's all they know. Future plans include attending professional ball games, visiting amusement parks, and more fishing. We are going to do stuff inner-city kids don't do, Dai said. Dai is also teaching the children to give back to the community. We want everybody to see it, he said. Jalen encouraged other young people in Decatur to join Young Men Making Right Choices. It keeps you off the streets and something to do, he said, not just on the streets doing something you're not supposed to do or that you'll regret. It will keep you from dying or ending up in the penitentiary, Braden added. And for more information or to offer assistance to young men making right choices, call 217-519-4198. And this is part of the Together Decatur series by Donette Beckett. If you know a person or a story that exemplifies the best of Decatur, contact Donette Beckett at 217-421-6983. And continuing on the front page, long road ahead. Comptroller says Illinois is not out of the woods financially. The mood was update earlier this month when state lawmakers wrapped up their spring session after passing a $40 million budget and a $45 billion capital construction plan, both funded by millions of dollars in new and increased taxes and revenue streams. Supporters of Governor J.B. Pritzker's agenda hailed it as a new direction toward remedying Illinois' chronically precarious finances. The state still owes billions of dollars in unpaid bills and unfunded pension liabilities. And, in the years ahead, Illinois will lean on revenue from sources like gambling and recreational marijuana that a Wall Street ratings agency characterized as volatile, while also counting on voters to approve a constitutional amendment allowing a progressive income tax. Make a toast and then get back to work because we still have a long road ahead for our recovery, Illinois Comptroller Susan Mendoza said in an interview this week. The state's backlog of unpaid bills totals more than $6 billion. Lawmakers authorized $1.2 billion in borrowing to cut into that, which aims to make inroads on eliminating the bills that generate late payment interest penalties, Mendoza said. That will mean interest rates dramatically lower than the 9-12% the state pays today, Mendoza said. And while that will leave a pretty hefty $5 billion plus bill backlog, it's certainly a lot more manageable, and it's a bill backlog that does not incur interest on late fees, Mendoza said. I think in a matter of a few years, if everything continues to move in this positive direction, we'll be looking at a significantly smaller bill backlog. A snapshot of the $6.3 billion in unpaid bills held by the Comptroller's Office as of May 31st shows nearly $1.8 billion fell under the category of medical bills, which is primarily Medicaid. Nearly $1.2 billion, or over 18% of the bills, stemmed from the Health Insurance Reserve Fund, which funds payments for state group health insurance. Roughly 24% of bills, or nearly $1.5 billion, was divided among the categories of pensions, elementary and secondary education, higher education, social service agencies, and other state government functions. The remaining 30% of those unpaid bills represented transfers to other state funds. Unfunded pension liabilities total $134 billion, the worst in the nation. Pritzker's plan to reduce the state's payment to its severely underfunded pension plans, spreading them out over a longer period of time, was scrapped after April tax revenue far exceeded expectations. During Illinois' years-long budget impasse while Republican Governor Bruce Rauner was in office, ratings agencies cut the state's credit rating to near junk status. In late 2017, Rauner's administration was also borrowing money on the bond market to pay down the state bill backlog, then hovering around $16 billion. That number is now significantly lower, and Pritzker and lawmakers from both parties have said the $40 billion state operating budget that takes effect July 1 is balanced. But Mendoza said her job is to remind everybody that it's not time to truly celebrate, noting the state's rainy day fund couldn't support one single minute of government operations. As I like to say, we're not out of the woods yet, but we can maybe see a little light between the trees, and that's a really good place for us to be, considering where we were just a year and a half ago, Mendoza said. Kent Redfield, professor emeritus of political science at the University of Illinois Springfield, said that while a degree of optimism is warranted, there's a tremendous amount of uncertainty, in large part because Pritzker is banking on voters approving a change to the state constitution to shift income tax collection from a flat rate to a graduated rate. Next, police unprepared for impaired technology to check for cannabis potentially years away. Illinois law enforcement officials are incredibly unprepared for the potential upswing in impaired driving after recreational marijuana use becomes legal, according to a Chicago area police officer spearheading a pilot program to develop a roadside chemical test for marijuana. Sergeant Brian Kluver, director of traffic safety at the Carroll Stream Police Department, said technology to accurately check saliva for cannabis-related impairment and support driving under the influence cases in courts is months and potentially years away in Illinois and other states. And unlike alcohol, there's no breath test for marijuana. In addition, Kluver said it's unclear how much it will cost and how long it will take to train more Illinois police officers on how to interview people and conduct field sobriety tests for marijuana. The field tests for pot are different from alcohol, but still can be used to arrest and charge drivers with marijuana-related DUI. Those challenges will put police in a tough spot, Kluver said last week. We won't be ready by January 1st, 2020. His statements reflected many of the concerns raised by police, prosecutors, and some lawmakers around last month's passage of House Bill 1438. The legislation would make Illinois the 11th state to allow use, possession, and sales of marijuana for people 21 and older. Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker is expected to sign the bill. The bill's supporters described the work being done in Carroll Stream to develop a non-invasive chemical test during the General Assembly. They said the work is a sign that technology is moving forward to identify and prosecute cannabis-related impaired driving. But the saliva testing program that the Carroll Stream Police Department began using in early 2018 for marijuana, cocaine, methamphetamines, opiates, and other drugs has slowed because problems with the testing equipment prompted the department to change suppliers, Kluver said. Testing with equipment from a new supplier began only this year, and the equipment isn't sensitive enough to detect the presence of tetrahydrocannabinol, or THC, down to the legal limit in Illinois, 10 nanograms per milliliter in saliva, he said. The equipment is sensitive only to 40 nanograms, he said. Illinois' legal limit for THC in blood for drivers is 5 nanograms per milliliter. Heather Steens, Democrat from Chicago, chief sponsor of House Bill 1438 in the Senate, said impaired driving related to marijuana is taking place now and law enforcement groups probably will never support legalizing cannabis, so their request for more study wasn't persuasive. Legalizing adult use probably won't lead to a significant increase of impaired driving, Steen said, so the wisest move would be to create a streamlined path for Illinois to implement the latest testing technology and fund more training for police. The bill would create a DUI cannabis task force made up of lawmakers and representatives from the Illinois State Police, Secretary of State's office, and advocates promoting civil rights and safe driving. It would make recommendations to the governor and General Assembly by July 1, 2020. Steens noted the bill calls for 8% of tax revenue generated by sales of recreational marijuana to be distributed to local law enforcement agencies. Based on her estimates for sales, the 8% could total $4.5 million in fiscal 2020, $11 million in fiscal 2021, and up to $40 million a year once the state's recreational pot market is fully developed. Next, racing on a wing and a prayer. Drivers have cars blessed at First Church of the Nazarene. Tony Reed writes from Decatur, "Blessed are those who go down to the dirt track in street stock class to raise a little hell." And they were blessed on Sunday, at least two of the drivers anyway, who both showed up for Decatur's First Church of the Nazarene Blessing of the Race Cars service. Lead pastor, the Reverend Adam Lewis, anointed the cars of cousins Terry Reed and Joe Reed with oil and invited God to be their co-pilot as they get their motors running and head out in the raceway. "And we know there will be times where we will hit the wall, where the car may flip over, and we ask that you keep us safe in that the car may be ruined, but we will not be, because we will be in your hands," said Lewis, 39, who has practiced what he preached. Bitten by the racing bug himself, Lewis has spent a season driving the dirt track circuit and even managed to win one race. So the pastor thought, what better way to reach out to race car drivers than start a new tradition of a race car blessing on Father's Day? First Church of the Nazarene was hoping more drivers would suffer their weariness to come into the blessing, but gloomy skies, threatening rain, they didn't in fact deliver, was blamed for keeping many racers away. "We'll make sure it's different next year," said Joe Reed, 54, who lives in Moquegua. "We'll get the word out, and we will fill this church parking lot." His racing cousin said Father's Day for him is usually spent quietly with the family after church, but he was glad to split the tranquility of this one with the roar of his beloved race car's engine as he parked in the First Nazarene lot. And Terry Reed said a blessing definitely can't hurt any driver who loves the thrill of the sport and running flat out to beat the devil. "My car will go anywhere from 60 to 80 miles per hour on the dirt track, and, oh yeah, it can be dangerous," said Reed, who lives in Cerro Gordo. "I have rolled a car, and you get in wrecks. My wife, Belinda, is always panicking." As well as making the blessing an annual event, the church is also planning a little high-octane evangelism. "We have prayer teams, and I want to get those prayer teams together and actually go to the track and pray for the drivers just before they go out to the race," added Lewis. And there are a couple of pictures that accompany this article. The first one, captioned, "Blessed are those that drive fast for fun." And the picture shows First Church of the Nazarene lead pastor Adam Lewis blessing the street stock racer of Joe Reed on Sunday. And next, Pastor Adam Lewis blesses the race car of Terry Reed from Cerro Gordo. "There are plans to make the new race car blessing an annual event." Next, legislation may reduce friction. State hospitals hope Medicare claim denial rate decreases. Years of finger-pointing by Illinois hospitals and managed care organizations about what the hospitals said were high denial rates for Medicaid claims ended last month with legislation that both sides hope will reduce friction between the two and benefit low-income patients. This is a really good step forward, said Jay Rossart, president of Memorial Health Systems Ambulatory Group. I'm fairly optimistic that the intent of the bill will resolve these issues. Samantha Olds Fry, executive director of the Illinois Association of Medicaid Health Plans, said Senate Bill 1321, if signed into law by Governor J.B. Pritzker as expected, would lead to hospitals sharing more information with companies hired by the state to carry out the state's Medicaid Managed Care Program, Health Choice Illinois. The legislation, Olds Fry said, would make sure hospitals and the managed care organizations, or MCOs, are talking to one another instead of at one another to ensure cohesive care coordination and discharge planning with a focus on the Medicaid members. Illinois' managed care system covers 2.1 million Medicaid beneficiaries, or more than two-thirds of the state's 3.1 million population in Medicaid. Medicaid is a public health insurance program funded by the state and federal governments. With federal funds covering about half of all Medicaid expenses in Illinois, the program covers one out of every four state residents and is expected to cost $24.5 billion in the fiscal year that begins July 1st. After operating only in certain parts of the state since 2012, the managed care program was rebooted on January 1, 2018, and named Health Choice Illinois by former Governor Bruce Rauner. The rebooted system was expanded to all 102 counties, including the Springfield area, in April 2018, and is designed to help the state save money and better serve Medicaid patients. The system operates with six MCOs, two of which serve only Cook County. The for-profit health plans operating statewide are Blue Cross, Illini Care, Meridian, and Molina Healthcare. Hospitals said they were suffering financially because MCOs were denying more than one-fourth of all bills for the care of Medicaid patients. This situation forced hospitals to spend time with money bickering with MCOs and the state for months over the often complicated reasons for payment denials in hopes of being paid someday. MCOs, on the other hand, said the denial rate was less than 11%. The two sides disagreed over how to compute the denial rate. Memorial Medical Center in Springfield is owed millions of dollars in disputed claims, many of which the 500-bed hospital continues to pursue in negotiations with MCOs and the state, Rossart said. Among the disputed bills, he said, are inpatient charges for the care of a drug overdose patient in an intensive care unit and inpatient charges for a patient with sepsis or a life-threatening infection. Those patients, MCOs, decided that the hospital deserved lower reimbursement rates and the patients needed only outpatient care, Rossart said. House Bill 1321 was supported by both the Association of Medicaid Health Plans and the Illinois Health and Hospital Association and passed unanimously by the Illinois House and Senate in late May. The legislation would take effect immediately after being signed and calls for the Illinois Department of Health Care and Family Services to work with a private vendor to establish a computerized clearinghouse through which all Medicaid managed care claims would be submitted. The clearinghouse would, for the first time, allow HFS to track claims and determine true denial rates and factors behind denials that could be addressed by the state and everyone else involved, said Patrick Gallagher, Senior Vice President of Health Policy and Finance for the Hospital Association. It shines a light on MCOs as well as accurate billing by hospitals, he said. Added Dan Hooden, Vice President of Managed Care for Hospital Sisters Health System, this is a good first step because it will standardize the language on the reason for the denial. It's the first step to bringing down the denial rate. The legislation would set up a clear dispute resolution process by January 1, 2020, for denied claims and designate health care and family services as the final arbiter of disputes. Next, 5 Questions with Chris Gilhart, Meteorology, a Lifelong Dream. Chris Gilhart is the lead meteorologist at the National Weather Service in Lincoln. Question number 1, what got you interested in weather and becoming a meteorologist? My interest in weather extends way back into my childhood. Around the time I was in kindergarten, I was greatly afraid of storms. My mom suggested I get a library book on weather, and if I learned why storms occurred, I would be less afraid. My interest has never wavered since then. Number 2, what type of education and training did you receive? I started as a meteorological technician, so my path to being a meteorologist was a little different than usual. I completed my education as a combination of traditional college courses, as well as correspondence and online courses. A typical meteorologist in the National Weather Service usually has at least a bachelor's degree in meteorology or atmospheric science, and many have also completed graduate studies. Once a meteorologist joins the NWS, he or she will also receive extensive training on interpretation and use of Doppler radar. We have also recently received training on the latest generation of weather satellites. Each office has a science and operations officer that makes sure the staff meteorologists are able to incorporate the latest research into our jobs. Can you tell readers a bit about how weather is predicted? Weather prediction is a combination of using computer models of the atmosphere, observations of the present weather, and our knowledge of what should be happening in a given situation. A computer model is programmed with mathematics and physics equations to take the current weather and make projections of future weather conditions. A meteorologist learns how to recognize biases in the models and make corrections while formulating the forecast. At times, none of the models seem to have it right, which can make the job quite frustrating. However, new and better models are tested and implemented, and new technology, such as our next-generation satellite network, adds valuable information to the forecast process. Number 4, what is the scariest weather you have covered? My entire career, first in South Dakota, then in Illinois, has been in areas where tornadoes are a major concern. I was involved in the forecast process leading up to the November 17, 2013 EF4 tornado in Washington, Illinois. Though I was not at work at the time of the tornado, knowing the potential of what could happen was scary. Seeing the devastation it left behind was very sobering. If the thunderstorm had formed another 5 to 10 miles to the west, the tornado would have left Peoria in shambles. What is the best part of your job? The best part of my job is working in a field I love. Granted, the hours aren't the best, and I have worked many holidays instead of celebrating with family. However, there is a satisfaction in knowing your forecasts and warnings help people. Maybe it's someone that postponed some work that could have been ruined by rain, or someone that had a close call with a tornado or flash flood. But the National Weather Service serves the public. As we sometimes say, our last name is service. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, June 17th, 2019. Please stay tuned.